Welcome to the M-Files. You are listening to Valerie and Ella Mayers, Patty Wood Finkel, and John Woodward, opening the cabinet of curiosities that is the museum world. On this edition of the M-Files, we are speaking with Madeline Calisi, the Registrar and Collections Manager at the Kennedy Space Center Visitors Complex in Titusville, Florida.
Welcome, Madeline, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So my first question for you is the question that I have, that I ask all of our visitors, but I'm hoping yours is a really cool story because you deal with rocket launches. What is the strangest thing that has ever happened to you at a museum? Now, this could be the museum you currently work at, a museum you were a visitor at, or even a museum that you used to work at.
I wish I had a rocket launch story, but luckily all of our rocket launches have gone really well. And the strangest thing that usually happens is guests who are just so excited that they, it just puts them in, I think, a very inspirational mood, and they become very effusive. But I don't have a specific story. We are on a wildlife refuge, though. So we have a lot of animal things going on. The gators are a pretty big presence on our site. I think the strangest thing was, sliding glass door, the pad underneath, apparently a squirrel is heavy enough to activate that. So we do have an area where I happened to just be walking by. I think I was probably checking the data loggers, and we had guests, and a squirrel activated that, and he went into an exhibit that actually happens to be a natural history display. And so he found himself climbing an artificial tree, and I found myself just standing near him trying to explain to guests that, oh yeah, there is one real animal in here, but he's gonna be out any minute. So I basically just gave a tour to the squirrel and very slowly escorted him out at his leisure. So that was probably my strangest guest experience.
That is a great story.
That reminds me of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, when they find the squirrel in the Christmas tree. And but the other thing, Patty, is, you know, we're all museum folks, and instead of calling someone a guest, you're like, well, a visitor on our podcast.
I know.
I thought that was like, yeah, we're too well ingrained in our jobs that we think they're not guests, they're visitors.
They're visitors. Could you please sign the guest book on your way in?
So would you please tell us more about yourself? I know you have a background in museum work and also a degree in English. Would you talk about your background and trajectory into your current position?
Sure. I think a lot of museum professionals I'm finding have sort of roundabout ways of getting into the profession very often. And I actually fell in love with 19th century American literature. And somehow that, I think, did connect. It did lead to an interest in institutions in particularly America and how they developed. And I did a little bit of volunteering with an exhibit at, or sorry, it was a collection at the Smathers Library at UF, where I got my undergrad. And that kind of came back to me after I graduated and I started working with the Florida Historical Society. There's a local museum called the Brevard Museum of History and Natural Science, where I got my start and then became director. And then I sort of crossed the river over to the Kennedy Space Center, where I'm at now. And in the interim, at one point, I was briefly up in New England working on a collection there. So I've been around a little bit, but primarily here on the Space Coast. And yeah.
Thank you.
So, you know, when you sent us your information, you mentioned your involvement with the Southeastern Museum Conference. All three of us really met through our state level association, the Colorado Wyoming Association of Museums. But we've gotten to know each other better, especially working through the Mountain Plains Museum Association. Can you talk a little bit about the Southeastern Museum Conference and I'm curious to learn about what the other regional museum conferences do to help museums within their area.
I think they're really great. They actually just had their conference a few weeks ago in Chattanooga, Tennessee, but it was a virtual hybrid. So a lot of us got to attend virtually, which was fantastic. And they made networking and connecting easy, and they still had events and ways for people who couldn't make it to connect, as well as those who could. And there were great sessions, and I know I certainly reached out to people with follow-up questions and everything. I think that it does make a really huge difference having a way to connect with people in your region. In Florida, we do have a Florida association as well that I actually don't have a ton of information on, but I do have one on our local county museum organization. That's Museums of Brevard. And I know that helped me tremendously when I started out, because it was the way to share information. And even just having that informal setting of, okay, do you actually do this process, or is there a better way to do it in practicality, or you know, what things have worked well for you to achieve really good practices when best practices are tricky. That sounds like we don't meet those criteria, but you know what I mean? Where it's, okay, what do we have to actually work with? And how can we share resources? So I found that it's great to be able to work with a national organization or other organizations, but having people in your area is a really big help, especially if you could, you know, go see them.
Definitely. We used to have a local organization here in Casper, but it sadly folded a few years ago. But that's, you know, the same thing. We were able to bounce ideas off each other, you know, build off of ideas for, you know, collaboration between institutions. So yeah, I agree. Your local organizations can be just as valuable, if not more valuable, than your state or regional level organizations.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. Everything from exhibits, joint exhibits between diverse institutions, to fundraising activities that people still talk about in the community that they really enjoyed.
So I get to ask all the fun questions tonight. Can you tell us more about the Kennedy Space Center and your role with the collections? And what sort of collections do you get to work with?
Sure. So Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, I can't talk. I'm going to redo that one if that's okay. So Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex has actually been around since the 60s. In the early 60s, people were very interested in the program and would drive down. And at one point, actually, I think you could do a self-guided tour and drive your car on a specific route and see launch pads. Then TWA came in and they had an actual official visitor center. And then in 1995 or 94, Delaware North took over, and that's who I work with now. And we get to run the center for NASA, the client. And that includes bus tours, that includes the visitor center. You might have seen or heard about the Rocket Garden that greets you as soon as you come in. And we actually this year just got a new rocket, so that's always very exciting. And like I said, we have bus tours, so you can go out, you can see the VAB, you can see the launch pads, you can see, we do have specialty tours that, you know, things are a little different now, but the, you know, there's a lot, because there's the whole Kennedy Space Center, as well as the Cape Canaveral Space Force Station is out there, which there's actually a couple museums out there as well, which is exciting. And we have our Saturn V Center too, and that's where you can actually go and see and learn about the Apollo history. So on center, there's Atlantis and IMAX. I feel like I'm forgetting a lot of what we have. Heroes and Legends, which talks about Mercury and Gemini. So pretty much the whole breadth of the program you can see with us, which is great.
So I have a friend who probably, and I can't remember, 15, 20 years ago, She lives in Texas, and she flew out to Cape Canaveral to watch a shuttle launch. She flew out there, rented a car at the airport, went out, watched the shuttle launch, and was on a flight back to Texas like 3 hours later.
Oh, wow.
The highlight of her life. She still talks about it. She loved it so much. It was amazing. It was one of those chances where everything just lined up perfectly and she was able to go.
That's great. I think it's worth the trip. And we do get to see a ton of international guests, which is really exciting. And it's great when they can time their visits with a launch.
So you mentioned in your discussion about the Kennedy Space Center that you work for a contractor that runs the visitor center. I'm assuming most of your collections, if not all your collections, are actually federal property through NASA. How does that relationship work between a private contractor running the institution and the federal government?
There's a lot of open communication, and luckily everybody is very much on board with meeting preservation needs. We are a Smithsonian affiliate. Everyone really understands what's needed. And that's kind of one of the nice things about working with a lot of engineers too. They have a great understanding of things like corrosion and how humidity affects things. And they really listen and offer their input. And you're right, it is their property. And so sometimes things overlap with other types of government property on center. So we work with different departments in that way. There's kind of a lot of moving parts at any time. So I'm just making sure that we have the right documentation for everything and everything's really clear. And it all, you know, has been pretty in place for a while and runs pretty smoothly. Yeah. And I know you asked about our collections holdings earlier, and I realized I didn't answer that. Because we do have rockets as part of our system, and it's very cool to look in our CMS and see an orbiter. Honestly, a Space Shuttle Atlantis is my favorite object that I've gotten to work with. That's a very cool one to take care of. We also have smaller hardware, so you get to see the science behind how everything works. Small things like utensils that you actually use on ISS, or what people wore, and the clothing is really, really interesting. And the materials, you know, most of these things are built to do very specific things and they do them very well, but stay preserved is not one of them. It's just a mix of different things that are constantly working against each other. But you know, the science is coming along and understanding how those are preserved. So that's really helpful. And we also have a NASA art collection, which a lot of people don't know about. And you can see some of that on display. So, you know, we have paintings, we have documentation, as well as hardware.
So is it a large staff at the institution? Do you have a big education team, I bet?
We do, and I actually don't know the numbers on that or on our frontline staff. We have a really great education team, and they are always busy. We have a smaller collection staff, and then we also have our exhibit techs, our care techs, who work directly with collections, as well as everybody in facilities and custodial who looks out for things for us. So, you know, they're an extension too of our collection staff, and then everybody beyond who works with the guests. So it's a pretty busy center. And then, you know, you go beyond just the visitor center and there's a ton of staff out there.
So one of the things that, you know, I think about first with Florida is heat and humidity.
Salt water.
Yeah, too. So, I mean, up here in the high alpine of Wyoming.
The dry, Wyoming.
Yeah, you know, things like humidity are theoretical. But when you start talking about collections care in a hot, humid, and saltwater environment, what are some of the challenges that you've had to deal with personally in collections care?
Usually it's something that was outside briefly. Luckily, a lot of what I work with has been inside for a long time. You even sometimes run into spacecraft that splashed into the ocean and there's salt water there. It's everywhere. The biggest thing are keeping our rockets out that are outside looking good and actually being good. That's probably the main thing. And those get much more frequent treatment. Everything else, luckily, has been in AC quite a long time and is in pretty good condition. And we didn't have to do a lot of backtracking on that. Everything has been kept pretty well. So as long as nothing goes outside, you know, as long as we're careful when transporting things, aside from, I'd say, yeah, it's pretty much just the rockets that are outside. We get pretty lucky with that. Just, yeah, don't leave anything outside for even the briefest period.
Well, you get to work at a dream museum. When you travel, what types of museums do you seek out? Are you more looking for the humanities, you know, writers' museums, or are you now a science nerd like us?
I'll go to any museum. I think the ones that, they've all been great, actually. They've all really surprised me. The one that comes immediately to mind is the Norwegian, I should look up the actual name. It's in Decorah, Iowa, where I am originally from, Iowa. And it's, I want to say the Norwegian Heritage Museum blew me away. I can look up the exact name. It really blew me away. And that was something that encompassed a huge amount of history and heritage. It talked about writers and artists and just different people who lived in the area. They had a boat inside the building. They had a cabin inside the building. It really blew me away. So something like that is usually what I end up looking at, just because it's a little different than what I see every day. But if I'm somewhere where there is a aerospace museum, I'll definitely go to that. Absolutely.
So we have a colleague, and in case I'm wrong, I'm not going to say her name, but I believe did an internship at that museum.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a small world.
It is a very small museum world.
It is, yeah. I know, I always think of that as being just this little outpost, but that's cool to know.
I think I work at the outpost. I work in a small building in the middle of at the airport, and that's about it.
That's exciting too. I also spend a lot of time in a building that can feel a little bit like an outpost sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yours is air conditioned and has more than just gas heat, and was probably built sometime. So, yeah. I work in a World War II era emergency construction building. So,
yes, that is different.
I thought we were going to get blown over today. We had high winds in Casper.
60. I think today was 50 to 60 miles an hour, but yesterday was 70 mile an hour gusts. Crazy.
Is that normal?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, it is.
Unfortunately, yeah.
We dream of the balmy, salubrious climate that you exist in.
So I have a question that came to mind when you were telling the story about the squirrel and the alligators, because you're in a nature preserve. How often do things go awry because you've got some kind of living animal on site that needs to be shuffled or moved or removed? Because you are not the first museum professional I've talked to in Florida that has had an incident with an alligator or a crocodile. Sorry, American alligator, right?
It's usually an American alligator. Okay. We do technically have American crocodiles. I've never seen one. And we also have invasive Nile crocodiles.
Now. Oh, I did not know that.
Never seen those either, but.
But so how often does that happen?
How often it actually interferes with something, I'm not sure. Usually the deal with alligators is, actually used to be a lifeguard where we just swam with alligators all the time. I don't know why, but the deal is usually if it's smaller than you, you should be fine. until they start to get too used to being around people. So we don't have any that I've seen right now that are incredibly big actually in the center. If you drive up and you're coming along the causeway, you'll see pretty massive gators along the way, but actually close to the visitor center, they're a bit smaller. If they did get bigger, then yeah, we'd have to call Florida Fish and Wildlife. I have had occasions where I needed to get to my car, but there were wild boars, so I needed to wait for the
this is why I'm asking. I have heard these stories.
Yes. Snakes. Oh, that's
yeah. We do have a flock of bully turkeys that live near campus, and they will take you out if you aren't careful. But that's about as violent as it gets out here.
Yeah, they live up the street from me.
The antelope are skittish. The deer stay more toward the mountain, right at the base of the mountain. We see a lot of turkey vultures.
Yep.
There are bison when you head out toward Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see pronghorns out of my office window all the time. They're always in between campus and the golf course, but I had heard stories about less docile animals making life difficult in Florida, so I wanted to confirm.
They do, and it's always the ones you don't expect. It'll be the sandhill cranes, which are protected, or you know, or we also have the turkey vultures. They love the Atlantis building, not sure why. But luckily our turkeys and deer are pretty small and timid.
That's good.
Our turkeys are not timid. They'll waltz out into the road and block traffic for 15 minutes.
Yeah, without a care in the world.
Yeah.
Had no idea. Things you learn.
Yep.
But, well, I think that's going to wrap up this edition of the M-Files. We'd like to thank Madeline for joining us today and sharing her insights about working at the Kennedy Space Center's Visitors Complex,
which is so cool.
It is. I'll admit to having gone to space camp when I was a kid.
Oh, you lucky dog!
What?
Oh, I always wanted to do that.
So I would probably kill somebody to work at where you're working because I love the subject so much. But in the meantime, between now and our next episode, we'd definitely like to keep the conversation going. So please follow us on our Facebook page, The M-Files Podcast, or shoot us an email at themfilespodcast@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. So with that, thank you, and have a wonderful evening.